The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined by Denny Carter and Kyle Dvorak as we get ready to preview the entire Week 1 slate. We will be joined by Patrick Crane in Week 2 when he returns from his Las Vegas drafting bender. He's going to be a part of the show. Today, Denny, Kyle, and I are going to go in depth on some of the week's biggest games, including Kansas City at Arizona, the Raiders visiting the Chargers, and we're going to touch on all of the week's hot-button fantasy players. But first, guys, week one's here. Do we feel like we made it? Do we feel sad there aren't any more best ball drafts? Do we feel sad that, Kyle, our never-ending redraft, slow draft is over? How are we feeling?
I think I feel good. I think I am glad that the final month of summer is over for a football content perspective, because I love potting with you guys. I really do. But only so many times we can try and guess, a 12 to 14% target share for Hayden Hurst on a, on a nice Thursday afternoon with you guys, to where I really just want to find out what the answer is. And it could be zero. And that's fine. Just tell me. I just want the answers to the test that I've already taken now.
That's right. And also, I'm just glad that we no longer have to talk about baseball DFS. You know, as a group, this is how at least I've been coping with a lack of football DFS.
Denny, did you take a bath on the baseball DFS?
I didn't win much, is what I would say. It turns out I don't know much about the game I don't watch.
I remember the first few lineups you sent me, like, I don't know about that. And then they were kind of bad. And then it seemed like you settled in.
they were bad. They were huge GPPs. Give me a break.
But yeah, I just playing into all your themes. I'm ready for data. I'm ready for new data. We've had more than enough quotes. And like, where coaches come out every day and basically just directly contradict what they said the previous day. I've also heard enough about week 17 run backs or whatever you DFS sickos talk about. I bet Kyle seriously knows the week 17 schedule better than he knows the week one schedule. Who do the Lions play in week 17? Who do they play in week one?
I don't know.
You're fired.
I honestly don't know. The Eagles.
They're playing the Eagles, yeah. You are
really?
Fired.
Yeah, that's fine. Let me try it. Who are the Seahawks playing week 17?
Jets.
Oh, my God.
Dear God. Who are they playing? Who are they playing in week one?
They play Russell Wilson and the Broncos, right?
Yes.
That was kind of cheating.
Okay, the funny thing to me, and I've seen this on a few accounts, is this idea that a Zach Ertz, Tyler Algier run back is going to be the key to week 17.
Just to say that people needed the season to be.
That is something, man.
People, Quadre Olison, Zach Ertz, that's going to be, that's where it's going to be really where it's at. Really, where it is really at in week one is Arizona. The Chiefs visit the Cardinals, a 6-point road favorites in the highest totaled game of the opening week at 53.5. Patrick Mahomes is breaking in an entirely new receiver core, but Kyler Murray will be adjusting to life with Marquise Brown instead of DeAndre Hopkins. There's a lot going on here, Kyle, but I'll just start at the top of the Chiefs receiver core. Talk about something like we talked about, like ad nauseum all summer. Like, we desperately, desperately need to stop talking about. But to put a bow on it, heading into week one, do we believe Juju Smith-Schuster is going to be a wide receiver 2 in fantasy for the Kansas City Chiefs?
Yeah, I do. And I think this is a team that could support a lot of guys in the wide receiver 2-3 range. I'm not sure if any of them ascend to wide receiver 1. It's been a long time since we've seen Juju be capable of putting up wide receiver 1 numbers. But there are reasonable, I don't know if they're the correct, but reasonable excuses for him to have not done that. He was playing with a decrepit old Ben Roethlisberger. He was oft injured, and he had strong enough target competition that he couldn't just be a volume hog once they lost Antonio Brown. There was never that phase of him ascending to the wide receiver 1 clearly role. So I think the arguments for taking him or having taken him, we're done taking players now, is that we know at one point in his career, he appeared to be on track to be like one of the next great superstars. Like he had some of the best age-adjusted production, I think 23 or 100.
He's still only 22 years old.
Mm-hmm. I know, he just got his first drink actually. Went out to the bar for the first time. It's been a while, but the talent was there at one point, and there are very reasonable reasons that it didn't get to show itself for the past 3 years, which is a long time. But I think if anyone's going to unlock it, it's Patrick Mahomes. And I think he's also the one that's going to be the most consistent, right? Sky Moore early in the season. I love Sky Moore. I was going to say as much as the next guy. I love him more than the next guy. But they were like rotating him with Justin Watson with like the third stringer. It's clear.
Will Sky Moore be part of the 46-man roster in week one? Another really, really.
Yes, yes. Guy. No, don't you. He will be part of the active roster. Will he be part of three receiver sets? It's possible he's not. I totally will concede that it might be weeks 4, 5, 6, 7 at best that we're seeing him. I don't think there's any question of that for Juju. Like, I think he's clearly the top target for the first half of the season and likely the full season, other than Travis Kelce, obviously.
Danny, do you have anything to add on the Chiefs receivers? If not, should I ask you about the Cardinals receivers?
Ask me about the Cardinals receivers.
Well, I like these like nail people down questions. So I asked top wide receiver 2 for Juju Smith-Schuster, aka top 24. I'll ask you, I think we take for granted that Marquise Brown is at least a wide receiver 2 with the Cardinals. But let's say, is he a top 18 receiver? Kind of getting into that mid-range, high-end wide receiver 2 territory. And just, again, it's something we talked about a lot this summer, but what are realistic expectations for Marquise Brown right now?
I think in this game environment, I should say, a very high total, could be back and forth, kind of fun for fantasy. I think that top 18 is reasonable for Marquise Brown. Now, I don't think that, or at least I wouldn't lock him in as a top 18 option week in and week out. But in this environment, I think that that's okay. You know, I've talked a lot about Rondell Moore as a top waiver wire ad this week. He was only drafted in like 25% of leagues. I think, you know, both of those guys could be very much involved in a pass heavy game script here. So sure. I, you know, Marquise Brown left Baltimore because they didn't pass it enough. And, you know, perhaps in his first game, he kind of reaps the benefits of what he was looking for, or what he was looking to get away from, and gets in an Arizona offense that will throw.
I was going to ask if there are any Cardinals receivers we're interested in after Marquise Brown and Rondell Moore, but I'm just not going to do that because there's not.
there's not. Deal, I'm in.
I mean, AJ Green is still on the team, which AJ I actually Green continually still forget about.
So I checked the depth chart the other day when I was writing about Moore, and I was like, no, this has to be outdated. And I checked another site, and I was like, hold up. AJ Green's still on the roster.
Wait till I tell you Andy Isabella made the 53.
No, I know. That. I know.
After
that.
His agent laundered trade rumors for like 2 weeks, he ended up making the team still.
Yes.
Is Antoine Wesley still on the team?
Antoine Wesley, yeah.
Yeah, he's still on the team. Wow, yep. There you go. Well, yeah, he's on IR, actually.
That is on the team, though. That is not, that is not on the team.
AJ Green kind of redefined no hype summer. But, you know, he's just a veteran out there plugging away, put his head down. So there's no need to write about it. Of course he's going to be awesome. It's AJ Green. No, it's Rondell Moore and Marquise Brown and yes. No one else besides Zach Ertz, who should do a pretty good Jason Witten catch and fall impersonation. Another, like the other big unsettled situation this game, the Chiefs backfield, or is it unsettled? Where like there was like many ways to interpret the Isaiah Pacheco hype over the summer. I think one of the better takeaways ended up being the fact that there was so much talk about Pacheco and like Ronald Jones and Jerick McKinnon was like good for Clyde Edwards-Helaire because it meant it was just being taken for granted by the Chiefs and the media. That CH remained the lead back. Do you guys agree with that interpretation? And let's put on record, is CH a top 24 running back, or is he more 24 to 32 range, like a flex?
I have a top 24 running back. I think I kind of took it the same way or similar in the same vein to you, where like the two backups that aren't what the seventh round pick, I believe Pacheco was, and Pacheco was like a 600 yard rusher at Rutgers. So
he wasn't good. And Raymond Summerlin, our dear friend, insists he is not good in very strong language.
He was last in the country by a long shot in yards per route run as well. Not a good pass catcher, not a particularly good runner in terms of his vision.
All right, cut his mic.
Athletic, and maybe he can. No, this is a Pro CH podcast, friend of the show, CEH.
That's true.
I don't know. I'm sure they're friends. He probably wouldn't be happy with me trashing him, but if he was into himself in fantasy, he would love it, because the other two guys on the roster are making a combined $2.7 million this year, and they have less guaranteed money than long snappers. Their players, the NFL, as a collective, all 32 teams have deemed like they're kind of worth being on the 53. And one of them, Ronald Jones, may not end up being actually active on game days, right? Because he's in so many special teams utility. So to me, the fact that they have this quagmire of seemingly not good backups, to me, is really bullish for CH. And the Cardinals were not good against the run last year.
No.
They had the highest rate of 10 plus yard carries run against them. And that's perfect for CH, because he needs those sort of freebies to look good. We need to get him off hot, because if he starts off slow, I do think, you know, among the players we are excited to take as top 24 running backs, at least I am, he'd have a shorter leash among them. So I want him to get off hot, and this is the good matchup to do it in.
We're back to me saying run funnel. And that's kind of what the...
How we missed it.
Yeah, I know. I've missed it. I haven't said it at all. Not now, Pat. Cardinals became a run funnel. The Chiefs total, implied total, has actually risen by a point and a half this week. They're up to 29.5. I think CEH is a really safe, like, low-end RB2 with some more upside. Jerick McKinnon is not going anywhere. He is going to catch passes. He is going to run routes. But CEH should get goal line touches, be involved in the green zone. I do like CEH this week.
It's a really interesting game, because this is such a good game environment and scoring environment, but it's just like kind of unclear who the fantasy options are on the Chiefs beyond the CEH, beyond Juju. And then, as we saw in the Cardinals, just not a deep offense. So it is clear who the options are for the Cardinals, but there's like not any like diamonds in the rough basically with the Cardinals. So I would say it's a game to like attack and for like tie breaking purposes, if you can't decide who to start, but it's just kind of, it's actually not, despite the great game environment, it's not a very deep like fantasy player environment just yet. So that'd be a really, really interesting game. So we're in depth on the Chiefs and Cardinals. We're going to hit on every game. Some games we're going to go a little more rapid fire. We're going to start that with the 49ers traveling to Chicago as touchdown favorites. Denny, what do fantasy managers need to know from this game? It's not lacking storylines. Justin Fields hopefully taking a step forward. Trey Lance kind of making his official debut as starter, even though he has started NFL games. I just said some of it, but what do fantasy managers need to know about this?
That's all you need to know. It's ugly. Okay, like this is going to be a slow game. It's a very low total. I think we should expect Kyle Shanahan to, you know, be conservative with how he calls plays with Trey Lance under center as quote the guy for now. We'll see. And I think that could lead to a pretty good workload for Elijah Mitchell if he is actually healthy, you know. And I know he's missed a lot of time, but the team seems pretty dead set on him being the lead back against an average to middling to sometimes terrible Chicago front seven. I think that he just could get tons of volume here if they get out to a lead. They're a pretty big favorite. It makes me nervous that the environment makes me nervous to be bullish at all on, especially like Brandon Ayuk and George Kittle, whereas I think Debo Samuel fits better with a run-heavy approach if that's what the Niners are going to do.
Yeah, it does not profile as a great environment, and hurt more by that George Kittle, like we want him to stay healthy more than almost anyone in fantasy, is somehow already dealing with a groin issue. Really, really unfortunate. Unfortunate for Trey Lance, trying to get his sea legs to. Denny, you're talking about Elijah Mitchell, and I was thinking of it through that CEH lens. We're like, talk about a guy who had a good summer because of what happened behind him, where the 49ers seemed very open to making this a bigger committee, and kind of just like the threes company behind Elijah Mitchell just didn't do anything with it. One of them is now a Philadelphia Eagle, Trey Sermon, and that still like doesn't really mean any, like this is still Kyle Shanahan. It could still be Jeff Wilson is the only guy allowed to touch the ball inside the 5-yard line. But it was a very, very good summer for Elijah Mitchell.
You should roster Jeff Wilson if he's out there in 12 team.
You should. Kyle, thoughts on Bears 49ers?
Yeah, I think this is at 40.5, like the lowest total of the week. If not, I can't imagine a game that's worse in terms of just the total. Yeah. I'm excited to see what both of the young, second year quarterbacks give us. But I think the best we can hope for is they look improved as passers, or for Trey Lance's purpose. He just exists. He hardly existed last year, but really just the rushing, right? We just want them to be good enough to not get benched as passers, which is totally within the range for both of them, and run the football a lot. And that's mostly what I want from these teams, because it's not the most exciting game.
Yeah, the young QBs give this game a little juice, where there's at least like an unknown factor with this game. So it doesn't look like a great game on paper, but there is at least an unknown factor with the game. Maybe something cool will happen. Maybe the young players will be better than expected. By the way, my boy Velus Jones not practicing. That's what happens when you're a 35-year-old rookie. You pick up soft tissue injuries right off the bat. Yep. So that is very, very unfortunate. But, yeah, and George Kittle, get well soon. Kyle, the misbegotten Atlanta Falcons begin the season as 5.5-point underdogs against the New Orleans Saints, who seem like a popular boomer pick to win the NFC, by the way. Maybe a popular analytics pick, too. I don't know. Jeez. What do people need to know about the Atlanta Falcons and the New Orleans Saints this Sunday?
Yeah, I think you guys talked about it, but one of the most interesting things is how they approach having Jameis Winston now with what should be a really good cast of weapons. Last year, no Michael Thomas, and then he goes down after week 7, Jameis does, to the torn ACL. And after that, when you have no Michael Thomas on that team, Marquez Callaway and Tre'Quan Smith, it was truly egregious. You can't be doing that too, especially like pretty much just a pocket passer and Jameis. Now they'll have Michael Thomas, Chris Olave, Jarvis Landry. And even without having really any receiver help last year, Jameis's interception rate, a career low. His sack rate was low dating back to 2016. And this is the most unsustainable thing ever. But he scored on nearly 9% of his throws. Also, not throwing interceptions has seemingly been unsustainable for Jameis. So there's that too. But they got the best version of Jameis we may have ever seen on 23 attempts per game, because that's maybe how you
that make, high. I would have guessed like 17.
It felt low, and 23 is incredibly low.
23 is shockingly low, actually. Yes.
It's shockingly low. But if they can get that some version of the doesn't make as many big mistakes, but still has good throws out of Jameis, and they should be able to do that a little more with receiver help this year, like that's the path to a ceiling for this offense. And it's seemingly attainable, because Jameis, in a small sample, looked pretty good last year. And then from the other side of the offense, the rushing game is super interesting in that Kamara was on pace for 323 carries and 90 targets last year before Jameis went down, and then he went down banged up a few weeks later. There's no way that sustains, right? And it probably shouldn't, because that was the worst version of Kamara we had seen. Unlike Jameis, you know, the volume efficiency trap went the other way, where we got so much Alvin Kamara, it was far too much. And it was one of his worst seasons, both as a receiver and as a runner in terms of efficiency. So I think the best case scenario for Kamara is his volume comes back a little bit. Maybe not all the way back. Maybe he can handle more than he usually did, but back some. And on the other side, New Orleans is not the most interesting, but can we please, much like Alvin Kamara, get the better version of Cordarrelle Patterson? He faced the 6th highest rate of 8-plus defenders in the box last year. And then to start the year, 7 of 8 on seeing 5 targets per game or in games. Then he closed the year 2 of 8. They just stopped using him like fun Cordarrelle Patterson. So I hope we get to see the cool version of that. And if we don't right away, my faith in Cordarrelle Patterson as a fantasy option would just completely dissipate.
I think the Patterson thing hinges largely on whether Drake London is available. I think if Drake London is out,
Patterson back-to-back limited practices Wednesday and Thursday.
Right. And he's been out for over 3 weeks now with that injury he picked up in the first preseason game. So that's something to watch if you're agonizing over playing Cordarrelle Patterson this week. I wanted to mention about Kamara. He had 49 touches in 2 games against Atlanta last season. He had 7 targets in their first matchup, 2 in their second. And I'm deeply curious to know how he will be used. Like Kyle mentioned, the Falcons last year gave up a 22% target share to running backs. That was the 7th highest rate in the league. If they take advantage of that with Kamara, it could be back to like PPR happy days for Kamara. We're just really hoping that he doesn't get 30 carries like he did late in the season against the Falcons.
I feel like no one wants that, but the Saints did not take backup running back seriously at all. No, like Mark Ingram is not a viable number 2 running back.
And just an overarching storyline. I want to see if they're going to just take the air out of the ball when they get the lead, if they get the lead against the Falcons, because that changes everything for the fantasy prospects of everyone in that offense.
Yeah, so I wish that was one of the things that baffled me all offseason was the Saints' lack of urgency and number two running back. Man, the Falcons, I'll say Kyle Pitts needs Drake London to play. He needs someone else to occupy defensive attention. So if Drake London doesn't play, I don't think Dennis Allen, I wrote this in my comp, but I don't think he's going to be spending much time game planning for like Bryan Edwards or whoever else happens to be claim that where their Wikipedia says they're an Atlanta Falcons wide receiver in the National Football League. It's not a good group. Not a good group. And the Falcons backfield is another pretty fascinating situation too, by the way. We're pretty sure CPAT is just like the guy again, going to get all the high value touches, but lots of weirdness behind him with Damian Williams, Tyler Algier kind of like going into witness protection during training camp. It's another fascinating situation for a not fascinating, very bad team. Do not stream Marcus Mariota against the Saints. Don't even consider it.
If you're down bad in a super flex.
No. It's going to be pain. Remember, this is the same Saints. Remember what the Saints did last week one? They put like Aaron Rodgers like on the pain train, scored 3 points.
Yeah, that's where all 9% of Jameis Winston's 9% touchdown rate comes. He was just tossing dimes that game. It was great.
By the way, that's analytics. If you want real analytics, just look at what these teams did last week one.
I covered that game.
It's the Sammy Watkins rule.
Yeah, I covered that game. It is the worst thing I've ever seen.
We will be right back after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.
Saving money on protecting your garden. Now at Menards. Messina's Animal Stopper is a liquid repellent that prevents pesky animals from damaging your garden. Available in a convenient, ready-to-use bottle. It lasts for up to 30 days, regardless of weather and watering. Save big money on Messina's Animal Stopper at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Don't forget to check out Matthew Berry's new show, The Fantasy Football Happy Hour. The legendary fantasy football analyst is back with NBC and RotoWorld doing what he does best, discussing sleepers, rolling out his love-hate list, breaking down who to start and sit, and so much more. There will also be plenty of actionable information along the way for you sports bettors as well. Check it out weekdays at noon on Peacock or listen to the show in podcast form wherever you download and subscribe. Guys, I don't know if you heard, but this time it counts for the Los Angeles Chargers. Our favorite hyped team every single year are hosting the Las Vegas Raiders in the inaugural game of their latest, you know, surely nothing can go wrong campaign. The Raiders arrive in LA as 3.5-point underdogs in a 52 total affair. That's as of Thursday afternoon. Denny, there are a lot of storylines in this game, but not much uncertainty. Kind of the skill groups are kind of set for these teams, with the huge exception of the Raiders' backfield, where do we believe Josh Jacobs is still a viable running back too? Or would he kind of like just buy in, like all the cryptic summer reports that they might be exploring like a much bigger committee, maybe a 2 or 3 man committee, or is all that noise? What do you think about Josh Jacobs?
Until we are shown otherwise, like for sure in a game that counts, I kind of think that you have to view him as the primary back. You know, I know Zamir White is there. I know Amir Abdullah is supposedly going to take on some sort of James White role in McDaniel's offense and everything. I get all that. But, you know, in a high scoring game against, you know, what was a bad Chargers run defense, it should be improved this year through offseason additions. I think that you can play Josh Jacobs, if, you know, you held your nose and took him and wherever he was going in drafts, I kind of
first
stopped
round
paying attention to him.
First round in the kind of leagues I play in.
Running back only, touchdown only. Yeah. You lose points if you catch passes.
I was the youngest player in my leagues by more than half. So, So Josh Jacobs, the first round pick in those leagues.
I don't think that he's like the most hideous play. Obviously, Zamir White should be rostered in all formats.
Kyle, on the other side, well, not the other side, on the like the other position group, the top three receivers this summer, without debate, were Cooper Kupp, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson. Maybe it wasn't – people ordered them differently, but there was no debate. They were the top three receivers. Davante Adams kind of settled into being the consensus wide receiver four. Do you think that's fair? Like, is Davante Adams still a clear-cut top five fantasy receiver on his new team with his new quarterback, Derek Carr?
Yeah, I think I came around to this, especially because he fits exactly what the Raiders struggled with so much, where like they don't need a guy who can rack up yards. Davante Adams can do that, but they just couldn't score touchdowns. The Raiders were 18th in passing touchdowns per game, but 6th in passing yards. Derek Carr looked good. Then they got into the red zone and just completely flopped. They're 29th in red zone TD rate. And Davante Adams, he's great at all things, right? He's Davante Adams. But I think the thing he's best at is he has a nose for the end zone. And it's not just like, oh, he scores a lot of touchdowns. You watch him and it's so very obvious that he is just impossible to cover both from
his. He's quite good.
He's incredible there. And you would think some of that definitely came from his connection with Aaron Rodgers. But if there are any other quarterback in the league, he could easily develop a connection with to be his college quarterback who they went whitewater rafting during the summer with and spent plenty of time together. So I think Davante Adams is probably exactly what this team needed to at least get them over the hump of being like a good offense, but then doesn't score a ton of points and you're not sure who you want to target. And to me, I think right at the end of the summer, I was comfortable taking Davante Adams over Stephon Diggs. If you had it the other way, though, I wouldn't be, you know, wouldn't be going at you.
What you're saying is adjust after you say the whitewater rafting thing.
That was a big thing for me.
Davante should have maybe been top three.
Can we tell the folks who might not know? So Derek Carr and Davante Adams went on a whitewater rafting trip, almost died in each other's arms during the trip.
And the thing was, I believe Derek Carr's, fiance or wife at the time was there too. And it was, you know, Davante and Derek Carr whose arms were interlocked and the life was just off to the side.
There's a connection there, folks.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if your life flashes before your eyes with someone, that's as strong as a connection gets.
Yeah.
So right. 180 targets incoming for Davante Adams or Denny. Will Hunter Renfrow and Darren Waller have something to say about that? I feel like people can't order behind Davante. We don't know if Renfrow going to be the number two target. Is Darren Waller, who like really, really wants a new contract, the number two target? Break down the Hunter Renfrow versus Darren Waller target situation behind league-leading target hog Davante Adams.
Right. So if you take Davante Adams out of the picture, which is great analysis on my part.
Take out the guy that gets 14 targets a game.
That's right. If you just look at the games where Renfrow played without Darren Waller last year, his target share and total like raw targets didn't really change that much. It was about one more per game with Waller out. And, you know, they operate in a similar part of the field. I have some confidence that Renfrow is just has enough dog in him to keep being the underneath target.
Very, very high dog levels.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, slot receivers are dogs, just period. Okay. Like the punishment they have to take over the middle, the things they have to deal with. So he's not going anywhere. I think I would rank him as, you know, a low end wide receiver two in PPR formats. Is that too high?
You guys, a little high. It is a little high.
Yeah.
Kyle's muted. He had to mute whatever he said. It was so offensive.
That's pretty. Yeah. I'm glad they gave me a chance to censor myself because let's just say it's a bit high for me. The guy playing next to Davante Adams and Darren Waller.
Right.
I'm not taking that.
Well, I'm saying in this.
Denny, you're a little high.
In this game, I am not. The total here is, it's very high. 52.
It's a good game. 50.2.0.
Could be fun.
Could be a fun game. Kyle, on the other side, the Los Angeles Chargers, one of the most well-defined like target trees in the entire NFL. It's like the classic big three, Austin Eckler, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams. I drafted Josh Palmer in almost every league this year, like best ball and managed leagues. Is there any room for Josh Palmer to make it a big four this year, or is that just not realistic?
Big four. I doubt he ever like pushes himself into a big four. But a fourth notable player, absolutely. I mean, the Chargers play in a way that is perfect for like passing fantasy production. They were top 10 in situation neutral pace, fourth down aggressiveness, pass rate over expected. They have a great quarterback, offensive line. I don't think a ton of consistency from the guy playing alongside Austin Ekeler and Mike Williams, but do I think that he's clearly won the third receiver job, and on an offense that is great at passing and loves to do it, that will have very good spike week potential. And in this game, it's perfect because it's the second highest total, or maybe the third highest total the entire week. He's the type of player you want.
Yeah, hopefully that is probably the most realistic good outcome for Josh Palmer, that in these really high total environments, these great fantasy environments, he could be like a spot starter type guy. And the Chargers, we know, are going to be in a lot of those type of games. So he is someone to keep on your, even in like 10 to 12 team leagues, I feel like Josh Palmer is someone to keep on your radar. Danny, real quick to end this game, do you have any feel on Sony Michel versus Isaiah Spiller behind Austin Ekeler for the Chargers number two back? Or is that just kind of thing we need to see settled on the field?
I was answering in the waiver wire Q&A, lots of people had questions about who to roster behind Austin Ekeler. And, you know, it's a valid question. I don't know if there's a guy that jumps out. I would say Sony Michel. Just go ahead and pick him up. But I'm not saying, I don't think Sony Michel steps in and becomes anything like a workhorse. I think it's just a hideous timeshare behind Ekeler. So I'm not really targeting from like a zero RB aspect, like getting guys on my bench who could fall into volume. I'm not really targeting that LA backfield in that way.
Probably a good idea because they're not good. But they do just need to be better than Larry Roundtree. Yeah. Denny, we're on to our next game where the rebuilding Pittsburgh Steelers venture to Cincinnati as touchdown underdogs. What do fantasy managers need to know about a game that plenty of fantasy fireworks on the Bengals side, way fewer fantasy fireworks than we're used to on the Steelers side?
The thing about Trubisky starting is that as much as Mitchell Trubisky is a joke, and yes, I call him Mitchell because I don't know him personally.
There was a rumor for years that he was insisting on going by Mitchell.
Really?
And it was one of those weird things this summer. He was like, no, I want to be Mitch.
That's funny.
Like, we called him Mitchell for years.
Wait, he's been re-Mitched?
Yeah, he's been re-Mitched.
I missed this.
Well, it's like Kenneth Walker being like, guys, it's just Ken. Relax.
So he's now comfortable in his Mitch skin.
All right. Well, he's an upgrade over Ben Roethlisberger, and I don't have any hesitation in saying that. Now, Deontay Johnson's status for this game is suddenly of interest because he hinted that he is struggling through an injury that is preventing him from, I don't know, using his arm. So we have to,
not big
we have to monitor that. You know, if he's out, it changes the fantasy landscape completely for the Steelers offense. It makes Claypool really interesting. It makes Pickens interesting. You know, mostly I'm looking at Najee Harris here, who last year, folks, in case we forgot, had 17 receptions in two games against Cincinnati. 13 of those came in one game, of course, which is just, I still can't get over that, by the way. And, you know, will he, you know, they talk about, we're going to reduce snaps. We're going to, you know, lighten the workload a little bit for Najee. Well, is that really going to hold? And so that's something we have to look for. But Cincinnati gave up one of the highest target shares to running backs last year. So I think that even if this is not a game, even if the Steelers struggle in this one, that Najee Harris can kind of save fantasy managers with some PPR scam points.
So, Danny, you think it's clearly, if Deontay Johnson doesn't play, you think it's clearly Chase Claypool ahead of all-time dog leader George Pickens?
That's tough. But, I mean, yes, for now.
Kyle, would you rather play, say, in DFS or redraft, would you rather play Chase Claypool or George Pickens if Deontay Johnson sits?
George Pickens, I think, because I think if Deontay Johnson goes, we're more likely to see like Chase Claypool being the second receiver because he's got so much more experience in the offense. But if Deontay sits, you're probably getting 100% of snaps from George Pickens, where I don't know if that's true if they have three healthy receivers. So if Deontay sits, I think that like almost locks in George Pickens for a large role. And if their roles are equal, like I want to bet on Pickens. I think Pickens just has the chance to be supremely talented.
Real quickly on the Cincinnati Bengals, you probably want to start Joe Burrow. You probably want to start Ja'Marr Chase. You probably want to start T. Higgins. You probably don't want to start Tyler Boyd. Not going to be a shootout type game, only 44.5 total. I would keep Tyler Boyd holstered this week. Probably also Hayden Hurst, who could be tight end twos type streamer, but get your Bengals studs in there, of course, but not a week to kind of target the ancillary Bengals players. Kyle, the single worst game of the week just might be the Carolina Panthers hosting the Cleveland Browns. What do fantasy managers need to know about the first and hopefully last annual Baker Mayfield-Jacoby Brissett Bowl?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I really hope they don't pick this one up for a second season because it shouldn't be particularly exciting.
Yeah, it's cheap content, so it's probably already been ordered for 16 episodes for season two.
Oh, boy. I mean, it's like you said, it's not going to be the most interesting game, especially with the Browns having Jacoby Brissett, but also a great offensive line and coming off a year where their quarterback was also not particularly good. He's playing in this game still. The Browns were 24th in pass rate over expected last year and the exact same rank in situation neutral pace. PFF gave them the number two ranked offensive line. It's perfect for a team with a bad quarterback. Play slow, have a great running back in Nick Chubb, and maybe the best offensive line in the league as long as they're healthy. And that's how you squeak out this, you know, 3-point field goal win in a game that only has 37 points at the end of the day. So I think if we see them come out and do that, it's a really bullish sign for Nick Chubb because the next opponents, the Panthers are actually decent against the run. I believe they were ninth in EPA per play last year against the run. Their next opponents, the Browns, are ranked 24th, 27th, 19th, and 30th. That final one's the Chargers, I believe. So if we get, as expected, the Browns just try and run Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt as well down their opponents' throats, it's going to be good. Like the Gittin's going to be good for the next 4 or 5 weeks. So that's what I expect. And if we see that, Nick Chubb is just going to start smashing every week for at least a few weeks. From the other side, I just want to see Baker Mayfield not be terrible. He just made so many like boneheaded bad mistakes that I don't think were like flaws in the offense design in Cleveland last year. And I don't think he's going to a considerably better offense. But even if he's only the Baker of last year, which would not be particularly good, it is still a significant upgrade over Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold's best rank in EPA per dropback is like 28th, and Baker Mayfield's worst, they've been the same amount of time, is 23rd. So even at his worst, he's always been better than Sam Darnold. So the offense should improve. It's really just to what degree. Is it a marginal improvement, or is it really night and day getting Sam Darnold out of the lineup?
Denny, real quick, are there any Browns receivers we can be interested in redraft beyond Amari Cooper or Donovan Peoples-Jones, David Bell? Strictly, like, we got to see what happens the first few weeks with this Browns offense.
I mean, honestly, I'd feel more comfortable with Bell as some sort of like outlet underneath.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amari Cooper on the out. Amari Cooper on the.
Oh, then Amari even. Oh my God. Oh, okay.
No, what I'm saying is Amari Cooper on the outside with Jacoby Brissett. Jacoby Brissett doesn't throw that. He does not do that. He targets slot receivers, tight ends, and running backs. Unless they really, really get Amari Cooper close to the formation in the slot, short routes, I think that it's going to be a major issue for his production as long as Brissett is in here. I wrote, you know, recently on the site about how Brissett has a history of targeting tight ends heavily. I think that's great for Njoku, but honestly, outside of Njoku, it's just all ugly.
Yeah, Amari has the feel of one of those like really good players that's just not going to. It's not going to translate to fantasy, and he's probably going to be outside the top 30 at receiver. In a rematch of last season's opening week thriller, the Cowboys host the Buccaneers as 2.5-point home underdogs for a showdown with a total of 51. Kyle, it is looking like all four of Tom Brady's top receivers are going to be healthy, is what I wrote before Chris Godwin said he was a game-time decision. And he was practiced in full on Wednesday. Did not practice on Thursday. Definitely seems like some sort of pre-planned load management type thing, but seems like he's going to be a game time decision. If he were to play, could he be trusted as a wide receiver two? Do you get him in there as a wide receiver three just because he's Chris Godwin? What would be our advice to fantasy managers about probably the most discussed player from this game, Chris Godwin?
Yeah, definitely the most interesting player from this game. I mean, Godwin was so good last year. Through his 14 weeks last year before he went down with that ACL tear, he was ninth in targets and second in red zone targets. He was the wide receiver 5 in PPR. And despite being a really strong red zone weapon, he was actually had the fewest receiving touchdowns of any top 10 receiver through 14 weeks. So there was room for him to potentially be like the number 2 or 3 receiver. So sure, maybe he goes out and you know, you're risking it. We have no clue what kind of snap count he's going to be on, but it's so worth the risk. He is the clear number 1 for Tom Brady. If he is active, I'm playing him. And if he goes out and plays 12 snaps, like, egg on my face, I'm shooting for the moon here.
Didn't he? Well, I want to ask you, that was a pretty good Chris Godwin breakdown. So I'll ask you about the guys behind Chris Godwin.
Right.
If he plays or if he doesn't play, Julio Jones versus Russell Gage. Russell Gage, like, barely practiced this summer.
Yeah.
He's healthy now. Julio Jones, in an about face, practiced all summer and is healthy. How do you break down Julio Jones versus Russell Gage behind Mike Evans and Chris Godwin?
The folks forget that Julio was actually pretty good when he was healthy in the Titans offense.
For all two halves.
Last year. I mean, really, it was 2.5 games is what it was. And you know, that is it encouraging for the long view of Julio in 2022? No, it's not. Okay. I don't think anybody's expecting that he's going to suit up for 17 games this year. But as long as he's healthy, I really think that he is the number three option, we'll call him number three option in an offense, by the way, that we just saw last season can support three fantasy viable wide receivers. And so I do like him over Gage.
And Tom Brady's the kind of guy, when he gets a player like Julio Jones, it's not like, well, Tom Brady didn't mesh with this really good player. Like, he gets them the ball.
That's right.
Dude, he like meshed with Antonio Brown, Josh Gordon, like the most unmeshable players I could possibly imagine. He's going to make it work with Julio.
He's going to vibe with Julio, right, Kyle?
You got it. Again, I've said this a few times. You use the words correctly, and they just don't sound good.
No, they sound offensive, honestly.
I never want to say vibe non-ironically.
Please don't.
Kyle, do we have any Leonard Fournette worries? I kind of tried to like create a Leonard Fournette panic all summer. And now it seems like it's kind of coming to fruition, where it seems like Rashad White might actually have a legitimate role as the number two. Or is that the kind of thing, believe it when you see it, especially with Tom Brady, who's not going to let a rookie running back miss a pass block? What is the Leonard Fournette lay of the land right now?
Yeah, I think last year Fournette was just too good to take off the field. And by too good, I mean perfectly fine. I don't mean he was elite at anything, but he didn't do anything poorly. He was 28th out of 67 qualified running backs in yards per route run. He was 18th out of 52 running backs in rushing yards over expected. He was good on the ground. He was good through the air. He's trusted by Tom Brady. I really don't think they're taking him off the field other than to slightly manage his load. Because, yeah, the worry is really he's a 27-year-old running back with a history of injuries and a really good rookie behind him. But he did nothing last year to not bring back the exact same job he saw. Like, as long as he's healthy and they're not using, and I don't think they will, use Rashad White in a significant pass-catching role, like, you're locking him in for top 10 numbers. The offense is just too good not to.
I will say, I think you keep Rashad White rostered in every, even 12 team leagues for at least 2 or 3 weeks, just to kind of see how the situation unfolds. Because Leonard Fournette is just not an efficient pass catcher. He is a good pass blocker, I guess, but he is one of the least explosive, like, high volume pass catching backs there are. And so I wouldn't be surprised, like, if Rashad White stays on like the straight and narrow, if they do give him a role, and at least keep him rostered. But yeah, you can't have any week one expectations for Rashad White. Danny, I was going to ask you a question that we already talked about on the Tuesday podcast, like who the Cowboys' number two and three weapons are. You just want to regurgitate what you already said.
Look, the Bucs are probably going to once again be a pass funnel, and that's could be good stuff for whoever gets that number two role behind CeeDee Lamb in the Dallas offense this week. We talked about, you know, on the Tuesday show how that's probably Dalton Schultz. But I think that it also speaks possibly highly, potentially, of Tony Pollard, if they are really going to involve him as a pass catcher, not just as someone who gives a breather to Ezekiel Elliott. You know, that he could be interesting for this game. The Cowboys are not, I don't believe, there are very few scenarios where they are going to be able to establish to their heart's content. And that means lots of passes. And that means that somebody's going to get the ball besides CeeDee Lamb.
In theory, they do. We'll see. 10 to 12 CeeDee Lamb targets sounds very, very plausible this week.
Sure. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Is Dak Prescott, by the way, a top 12 quarterback? I haven't ranked outside the top 12 this week.
I think, like, based on potential volume, yes. Yes.
It's going to be too late by the time people hear this. So the answer will be, would you have ranked Matthew Stafford or Dak Prescott higher this week?
I did Stafford higher.
I don't have a strong take on this. They're very similar profiles of, like, one elite receiver, question marks behind them, but in a game that should be fun. Also, the defense they're facing is a bit good, though. So,
you can.
I think Dak can get there just on like junk volume.
You can send me through the post if my Dak or my Matthew Stafford ranking ahead of Dak Prescott was correct, because by the time you listen to this podcast, that game will have already been played. Denny, the Giants began the Brian Daboll era as 5.5-point underdogs in Tennessee. What's cooking here with this game? What's cooking with the New York Football Giants and the Tennessee Titans?
Man, you know, the one thing we know about Daniel Jones is that he is great under pressure. No, he's not. He's actually one of the worst quarterbacks in the league when he's under pressure. And he's going to face a lot of pressure in this game against a Titans defense that is not shy about blitzing, about sending extra guys. A Giants offensive line that is so bad that Brian Daboll openly talked about benching his starters in the preseason because he just didn't want anyone to get hurt behind that line. Not much has changed since then. There are some maybe injury issues that aren't as bad as they were 2 weeks ago for the Giants offensive line. But I think this is an ugly spot for the entire Giants offense. It doesn't mean that, you know, you're not playing like Saquon. Obviously you're playing Saquon. I think you can play Daniel Jones in like super flex formats just with the hope that there'll be lots of offensive snaps, chasing points. The Giants defense is probably going to be garbage. So I do think that you shouldn't dismiss it, but man, I think it's going to be ugly. And the team has said, look, the season's going to be bad, guys. we're sorry in advance.
Is there a Giants wide receiver not named Kadarius Toney that we're creating plausible arguments for this week? Is Sterling Shepard playing, by the way?
He is.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man.
I mean, congrats to him for being healthy and coming back. But
I have to say about Wondell Robinson, I've been...
Yeah, come on, that's what I was fishing for. So
I've been talking about him all summer. They were, I think, you know, we should look at the fact that they were very careful with how they used him in the preseason. He played with the starters. He should be the starting slot guy for the Giants, but they didn't really use him. They weren't like peppering him with targets. They weren't giving him rushing attempts or anything. I mean, it was very vanilla when it came to Wandale. I think that changes week one. So it is a lot of projection about his usage. But I feel pretty good about the fact that they are committed to him as a starter.
Kyle, quickly, is there a dark horse case to be made for Treylon Burks over Robert Woods? Or do we just have to kind of go conservative and buy into the questionable summer and rank Robert Woods as the preferred Titans wide receiver right now?
Yeah, I think you probably have to do that right now. But, I mean, let's say you get buried from the Thursday night games. If one of these dudes has a ceiling, like, it ain't Robert Woods, I can tell you that much. No. So I think Treylon Burks was supremely talented coming out of Arkansas, and he looked fine in the final preseason game. Like, they weren't yelling at him for not being conditioned during that game. He caught all three of his targets, and I think he scored once too.
He did. So, I think it was in the fourth quarter. But
look, who cares what quarter it was? Who cares if he was playing almost in the CFL at that point in the game? No, I mean, you rank Robert Woods ahead, but if you're fun and you're cool, you wear a leather jacket, you still play Treylon Burks when, like, you know, Stephon Diggs drops 30 on you in the first game.
Kyle, in a game that everyone at this website is praying I don't assign them on Sunday, the Commanders host the Jacksonville Jaguars. What do the folks need to know about this really, really, really high wattage affair?
Yeah, you know, you should probably know what channel it's on to not accidentally turn it on to that one during Sunday. Oh, I'm actually excited to see Jacksonville. Frankly, you know, we joke about this one, but I think Jacksonville was so sabotaged by Urban Meyer last year, just not knowing how to run an offense, how to run a team at the NFL level. And now they're getting the coach who turned Carson Wentz into what would have been the MVP before he got hurt. And Trevor Lawrence looked good in the preseason in this final game, or on all 36 dropbacks. He threw zero interceptions, took one sack. PFF graded him as having no turnover-worthy plays. And that's what we saw last year, was the opposite of that. He just made a lot of bad mistakes. And then his receivers, when he was making decent plays, were never on the same page as him. In that final preseason game, on 21 attempts, Christian Kirk saw 8 targets. Like, if they have a decent connection, Marvin Jones is bumped down to the receiver 3. Zay Jones is somehow an upgrade over Laviska Shenault. They have a team that is at least capable of putting up points and not being a travesty. So I just want Trevor Lawrence to look good, and I think the rest of it flows through him. I'll be interested to see what Travis Etienne's workload looks like. But really, if Lawrence doesn't pan out, it doesn't matter. You know, James Robinson's not getting anywhere near the red zone. So those types of players, the ancillary pieces, they all flow through Trevor Lawrence. On the other side, The backfield, it will be interesting to see how Gibson is used, but eventually Brian Robinson comes back and changes things up. So I think we're in for a decent grinding game of Washington being a favorite. Antonio Gibson gets plenty of between the tackles work, but it's not a long-term thing, I doubt. I'm really interested to see how Jahan Dotson is used, because they used him in two receiver sets early in the preseason, and then, like any other veteran starter, they gave him rest in the final preseason. He's a divisive prospect as far as like Analytico. He's a late breakout, not incredibly productive for that final year, but it was good. 1,200 yards, 13 scores as a senior. So if he's going to be an every down player, a first round pick who was productive in his final season in the Big Ten, I think he could be a really interesting player. And I doubt he's rostered in a ton of leagues because he just went so late as far as rookies go, which kind of surprised me.
He was in the waiver wire column, folks. And nice. I think, if you faded wide receiver and, you know, might need to fall into some dudes who will have a lot of routes and get a good target share, Jahan Dotson may be your guy. As the person who will be covering this game, Sports Edge / Roto World.
Oh, that's right. Well, get Sunday ticket.
I'll never. It's against my religious beliefs.
I'm not allowed to have satellite in your yard.
And that's right. I mean, I am interested in Trevor Lawrence in a pretty good matchup. I think it's a good, you know, without Chase Young. Rushing the passer, the Washington front seven was per PFF kind of middle of the road. The Jags offensive line should be improved. I think it's a sneaky fun game. I'm just putting it out there with Christian Kirk maybe getting a big target share with Jahan Dotson, you know, being the number two in that offense. I think it could be fun.
Yeah, with no Chase Young, I feel pretty good about starting players against the defense coordinated by Jack Del Rio. Still, somehow.
Yeah, I think I feel the same, and I'm desperately trying not to make a joke right now.
Yeah, me too. Still Jack Del Rio. Just real quick, what I'll say about this game is Antonio Gibson, I kept him outside the top 24 at running back, even though there's a very easy, plausible RB2 case to be made for him with Brian Robinson sideline. I just can't ignore how committed this coaching staff was to like lightening Antonio Gibson's load. And I just wouldn't be surprised if it happens in ways that we're not expecting on Sunday, and that the workload just isn't there, that he doesn't come close to 20 touches. This could be wrong. I mean, this could be a very, very wrong take. Like maybe he's really the only option, but this coaching staff, they seem out on Gibby.
Yeah.
And I would have a hard time. I've got all these brand new teams I just drafted. I would have a really hard time liking Antonio Gibson as an RB2 for week one.
I fall on the side of the argument that says that Washington has no choice. Even if they don't like him, he's going to have to play a lot of snaps, get a lot of carries.
It is a pretty, it's going to be an either or, and I will either be disastrously wrong or gloriously right. The Minnesota Vikings usher in the Kevin O'Connell era with their arch rival Green Bay. The Pack visit Minnesota as 1.5 point favorites for a game with a 47 point total. Denny, there's a lot going on the Vikings side, but by far the biggest question is here, how do we prioritize these Packers receivers? Another thing we've talked about quite literally endlessly all summer, made more complicated now by Alan Lazard's missed back-to-back practices with an ankle injury. Yeah. So what do we tell the people listening about the Green Bay Packers receivers?
I take very little pleasure in saying that if Alan Lazard misses this game, which, you know, we're recording here on Thursday afternoon, we're not sure. Like there's still a lot to be known about this situation. If Lazard is out, I think you have to treat or at least think of Sammy Watkins as the Packers' number one receiver. And this comes from someone who I want to say Romeo Doubs, but I think that just the history of Aaron Rodgers, the history of the Packers, says that, and also the beat writers, that two beat writers yesterday were in agreement saying Watkins would be the number one if Lazard is out. So that makes him interesting. Well, no matter what you think of Watkins, that makes him interesting.
Yeah, take no pleasure in agreeing with that.
And yeah,
I mean, I was drafting Sammy Watkins in like May, and then I was like, I gotta live my life better than this. And I just stopped drafting him.
You saw the void and you stepped back.
I did actually see the void. I saw Werner Herzog lecturing me after I got 12th in his league and about how to prevent this happening going forward. Kyle, AJ Dillon versus Aaron Jones, do we have any insight into this, or is this the classic? We've gotten very mixed signals from the Packers coaching staff. They're basically both being called 1A backs. Aaron Jones, we're still treating RB1-2 borderline. But are you comfortable with AJ Dillon as an RB2? Let's phrase it that way.
Yeah, I'd say so. I am, like, the answer is obviously just straight up Aaron Jones. But the more the summer went on, the more I kind of warmed up to the idea that it really is a close to a split. And the reason that I feel so sort of shaky about Aaron Jones as anything other than like a high upside RB2, not on that like top 10 really stratosphere, is that AJ Dillon was really good. He wasn't just capable as a pass catcher, which really was just the bar to clear because he just hadn't been used as a pass catcher throughout his college career and then his mostly not playing rookie season. He was really good as a pass catcher last year. He beat out Aaron Jones in yards after the catch per reception, yards per route run, and missed tackles forced per catch. He was incredible as a pass catcher. And I don't think he was maybe the sort of tactician that Aaron Jones is, but it's the Derrick Henry thing. When you get a guy as physical as AJ Dillon the ball and you can match him up against a corner or a safety, like he will bowl over them sometimes. And that's very good for your efficiency stats. So I feel less confident that Aaron Jones will absolutely dominate the backfield targets. And it could just be a 50-50 split in all of the ways that matter, in the red zone work, in the reception. So I can only say Aaron Jones as like a fun RB2 anymore.
Yeah, the oft repeated line that in games where Davante Adams was out for the Packers, that Aaron Jones went ballistic in the receiving game. I feel like we're gonna look back on that and say, but wait,
oh, no.
What if AJ Dillon is way more involved in every aspect of that offense, and that seems to be what's happening. So I cooled on Aaron Jones. I'm not saying you know it was unplayable or anything, nothing like that, but I cooled on him after being really bullish on him in like June and July. I don't know. I just have a bad sense of how this is going to be split.
Yeah, Aaron Jones was so good in the red zone and near the goal line for a while, but last year he was already out carried inside the 10 by AJ Dillon, inside the 5. And yeah, it just seems like impossible for Aaron Jones to catch fewer than 60 passes. But like you guys said, AJ Dillon was like shockingly good as a pass catcher. And he just might be the guy at this point. And yeah, that will be a really, really fascinating one as the season unfolds. Kyle, are there any Vikings pass catchers we like beyond Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen? Because there's some interesting names like Irv Smith, even KJ Osborne a little bit. Anyone that you're saying calling redraft viable, or maybe someone to sneak in to a large pool DFS field? How are we feeling about Vikings pass catchers not named Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen?
Yeah, you probably can't pick up Irv Smith. Maybe in your home leagues you can pick him up. And you know, you probably should have drafted the tight end you want to play week one anyways. But if something happens, you get cold feet, you have Zach Ertz and he's not practicing or whatever, and you don't feel great about him. Irv Smith was an elite prospect. And so far, that's all he's been. He's always been a guy you look back and you say, well, he still was an elite prospect. And he hasn't really done much in the NFL, but he did have players ahead of him and then obviously didn't play last year. At the age of 20, competing with Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, Jalen Waddle, and Devonta Smith, like elite NFL talent caliber players, he led the nation, at least among tight ends, in yards per route run. Like, he was a supreme receiving prospect. Now he gets an offense that's much more conducive to passing. So I like a dart on him. He could always be a guy we look back and say, like, whatever happened to that guy. But as far as like players with incredible upside and super cheap go, yeah, it's the bill of good streaming style tight end or a good flyer tight end.
We will be right back after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Just a reminder, if you don't have the NBC Sports Predictor app, go download it now. The contests are free and easy to play, and you have a shot to win thousands this weekend by predicting what will happen in college football, Major League Baseball, on the NASCAR circuit, and in the Premier League. There is also $100,000 up for grabs by guessing the outcome between the Buccaneers and Cowboys and our Sunday Night 7 contest. And also join the new Roto-World League in the NBC Sports Predictor app and play Sunday Night 7 every Sunday with all of us here at Roto-World for a shot to win a $100,000 jackpot. That's right. We've created a league to let you see how you stack up against our fantasy football experts all season long. It's easy to join and play. Simply download the app, create or sign into your account, click leagues, and use access code ROTO22. That is code ROTO22 to play. Denny, the Seattle Seahawks, welcome back Russell Wilson as touchdown home underdogs. They're not down bad. This is what they wanted. They're happy about it, actually. They're really, really happy about it. What do fantasy managers need to know about this?
They're not mad. The Seahawks are not mad is the thing we should take away.
No, don't put it in the paper that they're mad. In fact, they're suing the paper when they put that they're mad.
That's right. We'll see. We'll see if that holds in the courts. Look, the Seahawks are, or at least were last year, a massive run funnel defense. We're back to funneling. We're funneling.
Folks, we love our funnels.
And they weren't good against the pass, but teams really, really ran it against Seattle. I think we could see that here. You know, with two good running backs for Denver, it's a mismatch. The Denver offensive line against the Seattle defensive line, it is a mismatch. I think that they could go that route. I'm queasy about the Broncos this week. I feel like it's going to be such a hostile environment. And this is not on the spreadsheets, but I just don't know if this is like a Russell Wilson blow up spot.
No, it's gonna be an ugly game. This is a low totaled game. And but I have Rashad Penny ranked as an RB2, which I'm not seeing much love for that ranking around the industry. I just think that he was the best running back. It was a soft schedule.
He's going to see a lot of touches.
They don't have a better plan.
Right.
Like, they just
right.
Do
there, there's no one else.
Yeah. There is no one else. So I like Rashad Penny as an RB2 until Ken Walker comes back, which seems like it could be shockingly soon. Seems like once again, Pete Carroll may have been misleading the public with his injury timelines. He's either way too optimistic or way, way, way too pessimistic. The hard-knocking Detroit Football Lions begin 2022 as 4-point home underdogs in a 48-totaled affair with the road-tripping Philadelphia Eagles. Kyle, we love our Detroit Lions, don't we, folks? But the Eagles are where fantasy intrigue is at in this game. We'll begin with, will there be enough Jalen Hurts passing volume to support each of A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert? We talked about it all summer. It's time to solve it once and for all.
It'll be hard for them to have like all three in one game really go off. It would have to be a unique distribution of catches, yards, and touchdowns all finding their way to different players. And to me, as much as I think Devonta Smith was a really impressive prospect, and he did almost more than I expected as a rookie, AJ Brown has legit been one of the best receivers in the NFL ever since he entered the NFL. Last year, he was top 10 in yards per route run, which is just a staple of his game. He's also elite in yards per target. He's just a guy you get on the ball and he just makes magic happen. And Dallas Goedert ascended to elite efficiency status last year, finishing only behind George Kittle, king of yards per route run in that metric. So to me, if there's an odd man out more weeks often than not, it'll be Devonta Smith. But I think last year, you know, the end of the year, if you would have told me they can support pass catchers aim, I'd have even laughed at that. They could hardly support one with how much they're running. So I feel much better about them this year.
Denny, what is our comfort level with Miles Sanders as the running back too? Seems to have kind of like Elijah Mitchell defaulted back into his role. This Boston Scott, Kenny Gainwell were not good behind him. So they got one of the guys who was not good behind Elijah Mitchell, Trey Sermon. Do we still trust Miles Sanders as an RB2? Do we think the run volume is going to remain prodigious enough for Miles Sanders to basically be like a take your medicine RB2?
I mean, they were the run heaviest team like in modern history last year. And Miles Sanders was not like a must play
since 69, I believe
at any right. Disgusting. But the, you know, it is something we have to remember last year. He's come back from this injury. He's had a hamstring, I believe. He's back practicing. I don't know. I don't feel confident in starting him as an RB2 at all. Gainwell's still there for the pass catching. Boston Scott will literally never go away. I guess you could start him as like a flex. I don't know.
Boston Scott?
Dude, they love Boston Scott.
You say this flex Boston Scott?
No, man. No, no. I said Miles Sanders.
Oh, okay, thank God.
Oh, sorry. I was like, wait, did Boston's guy like get cut during the show or something?
Yeah, no, he's been cut. Yeah, no, he has not been cut. But I think Miles Sanders is still, I think he's a take your medicine RB2. They should win this game too.
Dude,
they
Miles Sanders doesn't think Miles Sanders is a take your medicine. I'm not playing that guy. You kidding me?
Did I just RB boomer myself? I think
you did.
Yeah, you did.
Whatever. Kyle, Amon-Ra St. Brown will finish as the wide receiver. Enter fill in the blank here. Wide receiver what this year?
I said 18. Wasn't that much ahead of ADP. It's a pretty bland number. I don't see him having a ton of touchdown upside, and this probably is affected by the fact if you are in PPR, non, or the forbidden format standard. he's good. He's really good to finish out the year last year. But the fact that his competition for targets was Josh Reynolds, Khalif Raymond, famous tight end everyone knows and loves, Brock Wright, and Kadarrell Hodge, who I don't think began the year on their roster.
No, he used to be a Brown. He's in the Cleveland Browns Hall of Fame.
Well, for a Browns player, he's one of the best, unfortunately.
No, yeah, he's in the Ring of Honor. I mean, he's pretty good for them.
For the Browns, yes. For the Lions, probably not so much. Well, the Lions are also not a great franchise in recent memory. But point being, getting T.J. Hockenson back, getting a healthy DeAndre Swift back, adding D.J. Chark to the mix, and later in the year, presumably, adding Jameson Williams, an elite receiver prospect, to the mix. I'm not sure, especially in basically every fantasy format, rewards you winning the playoffs, winning the championship. I think he's potential to at least taper off once they start adding different players to the mix, like Jameson Williams, or getting DJ Chark more integrated. So a good half PPR, PPR player, but I wasn't drafting Matani. Went a little ahead of what I wanted.
I think with Amon-Ra, what I would tell people is you could basically bank 6 catches for 90 yards down the stretch with more several weeks, several 8 catch games, a few 100-yard games. Like where basically like 690 was his floor. I would say he probably still has like a 5 catch floor, but it's going to be more like that 60 to 70 yard range, which can actually be wide receiver 2 production. That sounds underwhelming when you say it out loud, but it actually is like kind of solid wide receiver 2 production. But like, yeah, I think he's like a floor based wide receiver 2, and there's not going to be a ton of ceiling there.
I want to say one thing about this game, and that is I know if you drafted Dallas Goedert, you're starting him. There's no question about that. I'm very bullish on him. Lions allowed the second largest target share to tight ends last year. Tight ends tormented them all year. If there's a little uptick in pass rate for the Eagles, Goddard starts out the season really well.
Before we get out of this game, just real quick, Danny, why does everyone hate T.J. Hockenson? Like, why did no one want to draft him? I don't know if I ever even saw T.J. Hockenson like drafted. Like he always, that's a joke. He just fell every draft I was in forever.
Yeah.
Is there a positive T.J. Hockenson case? I mean, we know he's a tight end one.
Right.
Like, what's like the bullish T.J. Hockenson case real quick?
So I actually had a surgery done this offseason where it was a brain surgery so that I could not see T.J. Hockenson's name in the draft order when I was drafting. It was
I underwent the same operation.
Pretty extreme.
I was actually born a bit colorblind, but only to T.J. Hockenson, like the letters that compose his name.
Roaring success, the operation.
You know, he had everything working for him before the Amon-Ra breakout last year. Like he was running a ton of routes, right? He was in there. He was all the metrics that lead to production were there. The production was not. So I
wonder what that says about him. I wonder what that could mean.
And you know, I mean, he was like a great prospect in a lot of ways, but I don't have much hope for him as a plug and play. Like, you know, you're not going to be confident in playing T.J. Hockenson this year. Let's say that.
No, he's just a take your medicine low end tight end one, and yeah, he's fine. Maybe he's not even fine.
He's not fine.
He might not be fine. Whatever.
That's why when people were drafting him over Goddard, I didn't understand.
Goddard's
a highly much superior option.
Yeah, that was poor. That was poor form. Kyle, the New York begin year 2 of the Zach Wilson era with Joe Flacco under center. The Ravens are in town as touchdown favorites. What do the folks need to know about this game?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Joe Flacco, right? Because Joe Flacco, good might not be what you would use to describe Joe Flacco at this point in his career, but fun maybe is a way to describe him. He got one start last year through 11 targets to Elijah Moore, then through 7 to Corey Davis, and then another 7 to Jameson Crowder. No surprise there, he doesn't throw to his running backs, just 2 targets to his running backs. And as much as I love Michael Carter, I actually think he's going to have a much larger role. The unfortunate timing of him getting a 0 check down quarterback to start the year and then probably Breece Hall ramps up later in the year may end up like kind of unfortunately making all of us zero RB guys who took him as the pass catching guy sort of getting a bad beat on that one. It makes me bullish on the receivers though, because Zach Wilson was terrible last year and every backup that came in, they did great, at least for the fantasy production of the team. Moving to the other side of this game, Ravens should probably kill the Jets, 7-point spread, and Lamar Jackson averages 5 more points per game in games where he is favored by a touchdown or more. And I think Rashad Bateman should be a big part of that. We think of him as this slot scheme kind of guy, because that's a bit what he was in his final collegiate season. The year before that, he had a 17 ADOT. He played more on the outside. He went 1,200 yards. So to me, this should be the perfect way to set off, hopefully, a rebound for the Ravens.
I really quickly apologize to Giants fans for trading them Zach Wilson in my intro to this game. Yeah. I accidentally said he was on the Giants. We are, of course,
I was really worried I prepared for the wrong game.
Yeah, we are, of course, talking about the New York Jets. And Denny, it looks like you have thoughts.
Yeah, no, Kyle's right about the Michael Carter thing. It's really unfortunate that Joe Flacco refuses to throw to running backs. But we should say Michael Carter is listed as the RB1 on the Jets depth chart going into week
come
one.
On, man.
It's happened. Okay. It's not happening. It's already happened. Michael Carter is the number one back in the New York backfield. You know, that's tough. That's tough for the Breece Hall folks. But, I will say that we're going to get into funnels. We have a pass funnel versus a run funnel here. The run funnel is the Jets. Teams destroyed the Jets on the ground last year. I think it'll be well worth figuring out. If anybody out there has any ideas, let me know who is going to operate as the number one running back for the Ravens, because they could have a lot of opportunity. But like on Sunday morning, if we hear that, you know, that like Mike Davis is going to suit up as the RB1, if J.K. Dobbins is not going to play, we have to have interest in that just because of game script opportunity.
Yeah, J.K. Dobbins is sounding like a game time decision where there seems like there's been a disconnect all year between him and the team over how
and
healthy.
Ian Rappaport. Him and Ian Rappaport have not been on the same page.
No. Well, speaking of Ian Rappaport, he reported Thursday that Kenyon Drake kind of confirmed a suspicion I had, was signed to be the, quote, de facto starter if J.K. Dobbins misses time and not Mike Davis. And that would be my lean. That's going to be my rankings lean, is Kenyon Drake over Mike Davis. But I agree with Danny. Like, it's not settled. It's not settled law.
I don't know why I said Mike Davis. I wrote up Kenyon Drake in the waiver wire piece. I guess I'm hedging a little, but Kenyon Drake would be very interesting if Dobbins does not play.
Yeah, it's just the fact that we don't quite know. We just don't. The best bet is Kenyon Drake, but we don't quite know. And I would also guess that J.K. Dobbins does not play. It just seems like he wants to play so badly. But the people who are like paid to make decisions for the Ravens don't want his knee to re-tear. And it seems like they're trying to take it as easy as possible with J.K. Dobbins. And my guess, it could come down to Sunday morning. I think we'll get a Friday decision. I think if he's going to be ruled out, it'll be Friday. And I think he makes it through Friday, he'll probably play.
Sure.
We don't know with J.K. Dobbins. The new look Miami Dolphins are hosting eternal nemesis New England as 3.5-point home favorites. Las Vegas has set the over-under at 46. Craig Dennis Carter, where do you come down on the Tyreek Hill versus Jalen Waddle debate, if there's a debate at all? I don't know. I've been trying to like manufacture debate on this one. But I think you think Tyreek Hill is safely ahead of Jalen Waddle, don't you?
Well, yeah, and I feel like I'm on an island there, because the Zoomers say it's opposite. It's Waddle ahead of Hill. I don't think that the Dolphins moved heaven and earth to get a wide receiver too. And I think that they are going to jam this guy targets. I mean, just touches of any kind all around the field. You know, to me, he's the best receiver in the league. I just don't know how he's not going to be extremely productive in this offense.
I agree that is the plan. I just wouldn't be shocked if like once like the fur starts flying on the field, basically, that Tua has this muscle memory already with Jalen Waddle. And he's already had 100 reception season with Jalen Waddle. But I mean, your take is the sensible one. Like, that is like the percentage take. They didn't trade for Tyreek Hill to have him play behind Jalen Waddle. Even though Jalen Waddle is a very high draft pick, it is a weird situation, I will say. And maybe the receiver corps is big enough for the two of them. But that's one I'm really looking forward to. To getting settled beginning this weekend. And Kyle, something we need settled is the Patriots backfield. Is Ramondre Stevenson RB2 happening? Or are we just like, are we getting ahead of ourselves? Like, confirmation biasing, like all over the place, like the seizing on anything that makes it look like Ramondre Stevenson is ahead of Damian Harris. What do you think is going on in the Patriots backfield?
It is not happening. It has already happened. Okay. It has already happened. I set you up and then I knocked you down. Rhondre Stevenson was a good running back last year. We think of him as like, oh, he can be, you know, he's really the pass catching type of guy. That's the ceiling we want. And that's where the ceiling probably comes from. But he's a floor of being a very efficient runner between the tackles. And that path is now clear for him to be the team's 1B on a team that loved running the football last year. He was 15th in yards after contact per attempt and 21 in missed tackles forced, and he didn't get the ball that much. And then we know, dating back to his college days, he is a good receiving prospect. And Bill Belichick even complimented his pass blocking. He's the perfect guy to now take on that James White-esque role, and he can run more than James White was ever going to. So I don't think he captures the full James White. I think very few players ever really capture that much receiving volume, but he can capture a lot of that and capture a lot of the backfield and be efficient in both respects. So yeah, RB2 season for Rhamondre, it's already happened. We've been here.
Thank God. Denny, is there a single Patriots receiver worth caring about?
God almighty. I mean, I guess like maybe Devontae Parker, but even he's really ugly. And I may have just said that because of the revenge factor here against Miami. But no. I mean, this past game, for a long time, it looked like Kendrick Bourne would be interesting. Doesn't look like that anymore.
You know? He did not ace the report in camp.
He is down bad, reportedly. So it's Parker. It's maybe what's his face?
Jack Myers, J-A-K Myers.
That's right,
Jack
Myers. You know, but no, I mean, unless you're like in a 14-team league starting four or five receivers, you're not, just don't look to this offense to get wide receiver
help. Well, especially in week one, season goes and there are injuries, I'm sure you're going to get trapped into starting Jacoby Myers or Devontae Parker occasionally. But week one, you should have better options.
I am very interested to see Jonnu Smith's usage.
I had him unranked and then added him to the rankings late in the week because never, what is dead may never die.
That's right.
Jonnu, please. Kyle, is it Chase Edmonds season at long last? Was this a vote of confidence when they cut Sony Michel? Or is it just going to be the same old, 12 to 15 touches, not enough touchdowns, enough work to be a flex, but nothing more?
Yeah, I think that this is finally the chance for him to prove he can be the real RB2 type, which he has the profile of at least as a pass catcher. He's never been used at the goal line, and that's really what concerns me. And he doesn't have the size. They have Raheem Mostert, who is trusted by the team. But Raheem Mostert is a veteran who started his career as like a UDFA practice squad level player. And then he comes to Miami because he knows the system and he's fasting it at home runs, but they're not paying him a ton of money. They cut Sony Michel for him. They weren't cutting other great players to keep him on the roster.
Hey, come on.
And his incredibly extensive injury history would lead me to believe it's almost foolish to try and give him more than 8 touches a game. That's how you'd maximize his skill set. And on the other hand, Chase Edmonds has been really good in just his limited samples, and they paid him as such. So I do think this is the best chance we'll ever get. Now, if the first, the first goal line touch goes to Raheem Mostert, you start sweating bullets there. But I would still bet on it being Chase Edmonds simply based on the money they paid him.
It's going to be like Salvin Ahmed or something. It's not going to even be Raheem Mostert. He won't get touches at the goal. It's going to be someone way more triggering than
somehow Jeff Wilson is also on this.
Exactly. Yeah. They have a sharing agreement where he wasn't really in the Niners game.
They put him on loan.
So the Dolphins get to use him this week. Yeah, I'm already triggered thinking about that. Denny, the Texans play host to the Indianapolis Colts as touchdown underdogs. It's the final game of our preview podcast. What do we need to know about this game?
You're just starting your Colts. Like roll out your Colts. I mentioned Matt Ryan in the waiver wire piece. He was rostered in about 45% of leagues. I know in your league he was not available, but in most leagues he was. The Colts have a very high total. We're hoping that Frank Reich follows through with this offseason talk about establishing the pass a little bit. You know, big change from last season when they were really, really trying not to destroy themselves with Carson Wentz throwing the ball. Yeah, Matt Ryan, by all accounts, from coaches, beat writers, everybody, has commanded this offense, has excelled in it in practice and in training camp. So get your Colts out there. And that includes like in deeper leagues. I think you can mess around with like starting Alec Pierce or Paris Campbell, guys like that. I think Mo Alie-Cox might actually profile as a nice streaming tight end option if you are down bad at tight end. So start your Colts. And then, on the other side, I think Brandon Cooks could fall into some volume here if Pep Hamilton's offense really does, you know, pass the ball. He hinted actually today on Thursday. He said, "I never said we're a run first offense. I said we're a score first offense." And I think that's what I think.
True.
So I'm hoping and praying that that is actually true. And if they throw a lot, then, you know, Brandon Cooks has a lot more appeal than otherwise, you know, in, from last year's offense being very, very run heavy when they had the lead or when the game script was neutral.
This is a game where week one, you can monitor kind of some of the down ballot receivers. And there's some breakout potential with Paris Campbell, like you said, Nico Collins for sure in Houston. Neither one of them, they're not guaranteed to happen. Let's put it that way. Even Alec Pierce is someone worth monitoring. It is a game where not a high wattage game on the surface, but potentially some fantasy value bubbling under the surface. And one for like week two waiver wire purposes that I would be monitoring. So
I have to say, just as an aside, and this is in my column this week, Rex Burkhead is the RB2.
Cut.
I'm not saying I know. Keep my mic on, Adam, producer Adam. Look, I'm not saying it's interesting.
Actually, I'm cutting Denny's mic.
They're cutting my mic.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm not saying he's good for this game, but I think he should be rostered in more leagues because there is nobody behind him on that depth chart. If anything happens to Damian Pierce, it's Burkhead getting 20 touches a game.
It's sadly true. Rex Burkhead should be rostered in most 12-team leagues with any sort of point per reception reward. He needs to be rostered, and we need to be rostered on your podcast lineup. Download us. Subscribe to us, continue to listen to us, head over to the website we work for, NBC Sports Edge, Roto World, check out Denny's waivers column, check out my rankings column, check out Karain's walkthrough. Kyle, tell us about your comms. You've got a lot of new stuff this year. What are comms we need to be checking out from Kyle Dvorchik?
You can check out the 32 preseason stats you need to know as a little primer for what you missed over the past few weeks while you were living your life, I assume. I wasn't, but hopefully you were, because you're definitely not anymore. Right. Certainly not anymore. And then at the time this comes out, I'll definitely have the DFS article, the DFS breakdown live as well.
And you have a DFS questionnaire or Q&A, right, too, that Patrick Crane blew you off this week. But, right, you have a Craner co-host, right?
Normally Crane will be the co-host, but he is off serving his final, you know, penance to the drafting gods.
I thought you say serving his country, and he is. Drafting high stakes leagues, you're serving your country. And
someone had to do it. It's something we've always thought is who will do this if not Pat?
It's twisted, cruel way.
Yeah, it stimulates the economy.
Yeah, he's stimulating the economy. There you go. So Pat Crane, check out his walkthrough. Just see so much great stuff on the site. Stuff I'm forgetting, but just chock full of amazing stuff. Nick Menzio starts sit heading into week one. Matthew Berry's love hate. It's all there. Thank you so much for listening. Join us next week when Pat Crane will be back to preview week two. Join Denny and I on Tuesday. Check out Galaxy Brains on YouTube. For Denny, for Kyle, I'm Pat. We'll catch you guys later.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You can start your day off right when you find a professional on Angie to get your plumbing right first. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.